Collier's magazine covers, Boy's Life magazine covers, pop-up greeting cards, award-winning pop-up greeting cards, Golden Book illustrations. I could only be talking about one man, the legendary Lowell Hess, coming up next, one-on-one.
When you've got a job to do, reach for something good to chew. Chewing helps you stand the pace, anytime and any place. So, hi-ho, hey, hey, chew your little troubles away. Hi-ho, hey, hey, chew Wrigley's Spearmint Gum. Work goes faster, smoother too. Life seems brighter when you chew. Hi-ho, hey, hey, chew Wrigley's Spearmint Gum.
It's good to sink your teeth into Wrigley's Spearmint Gum. That lively flavor freshens your mouth, and the good chewing helps make the job go smoother and faster. Enjoy chewing Wrigley's Spearmint Gum every day, as millions do.
Hi-ho, hey, hey, chew your little troubles away. Hi-ho, hey, hey, chew Wrigley's Spearmint Gum.
Welcome back to the Boing Podcast. Again, this is Todd Dolce, and I was really honored and privileged to interview the legendary Lowell Hess from his home via telephone in New Jersey. It was very difficult for me to keep my enthusiasm under control during this interview, considering how much I admire the beautiful illustration work that he's created through the years, and I did my best to keep the discussion on track. Lowell Hess began his art career he actually went to the Pratt Institute in Brooklyn. He actually started a little before then, but he got some education there in Pratt Institute, some background there. And then he began his illustrious career in the heyday of magazine illustrations. A lot of his work was featured in Collier's magazine, which he made it quite clear was one of his favorites. Boy's Life as well, and he did Golden Books. You know, and you can look at the Golden Books, you know, those books that we all read as kids, and legends like Gustav Tengren, who did the Saggy Baggy Elephant, and I think the Tawny Scrawny Line, as many others, and Tom Oreb, who did Once Upon a Wintertime. Lowell Hess has to be right up there in that same class because he did some beautiful books as well. The Christmas Treasury, which I absolutely love the artwork in that. And Ali Baba and the 40 Thieves, and he did the Giant Golden Book of Mathematics, and he worked in gouache. Just tremendous, tremendous work. And his styles were just so, he could do anything. I mean, any kind of, you know, style you wanted him to do, he could do it. And he turned his work out fast. Again, I was very thrilled to be able to get 30 minutes with Lowell, and he was very generous with his time. And we're gonna just go right into the interview. I'm not gonna interrupt it with commercials. It's just for continuity's sake. We're just gonna let it roll for all it's worth, and we'll get right into it here as he's explaining the fact that he's battling Parkinson's right now. He's 88 years old, and he's actually legally blind now. So, you know, he's having a rough time of it. But you would never know just by the fact he is so nice and just such a professional, a consummate professional through and through. It's from an era gone by. And again, I was just so lucky and fortunate to be able to sit down and talk with him. So without any further delays or hesitation, let's get right into the interview. Again, it was recorded via telephone Lowell Hess.
I am legally blind, and I have Parkinson's disease for about 25 years.
Oh, really?
So I can't do any work anymore.
Oh, okay.
All I do is enjoy people like you who call and talk and want to talk.
Oh, well, yeah, I'd love to be able to, you know, get a few minutes of your time.
Sure, whatever.
Oh, great. Well, I guess if what I could do is here, if you want to just start with the first question, and I've got a podcast on the internet that basically covers different artists and techniques and stuff like that, and I know I was doing some surfing and your name came up, and I'd seen some of your work before, and I just never associated it with who was behind the artwork, but once I started getting into it, I'm like going, man, you know, this is really, really, really great stuff. So,
thank you.
I guess what I would love, you know, just, I guess starting back at the Pratt Institute.
At the beginning, actually.
Right, in Brooklyn.
Even before that, I went to the University of Oklahoma.
Oh, okay.
4 years of fine arts. And that gave me the basis to work. And then I went to Pratt for one semester. And I got my business acumen, my attitude toward business. And so that's where I got ready to start out, really go.
So then I know that you were featured like in Collier's magazine, A Boy's Life, but how did that start after Pratt? Like how did...
Well, the way it happened, I was this green kid from Oklahoma and I didn't know from beans. And my portfolio was really very amateurish. But I went to this agent and he told me years later he thought that my enthusiasm won him over. And so he took me on as one of his stable people. And I learned all of Jim Bingham and James Cordray and Ren Wicks and all the big names in the field. And one of them was, when I went there, the lady that started the agency was the husband of Seymour Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a real go-getter, and she showed some of my work over at Coral Collier, and they wanted to see some of it. And it was pretty amateurish at first, but I quickly got in stride. And one day, the art director of Collier's magazine told me, he said, well, I can get better art, but I can't get somebody that I can always depend on to come up with an idea. He said, I get some of these crummy scripts sometimes, and I don't know what to do with them. And you always come up with an answer. And that's what he said, you're my number one fireman.
Wow.
That's how I got started at Collier's.
That's great. That's great.
And since Collier's was part of the Crowell Collier group, I also did work for Women's Home Companion and American Magazine, which they were all part of that organization. Hmm. And so they took me under their wing, and for many years I was happy with them.
That's great. Then, now I know, I mean, my favorite growing up, I think most kids, you know, started out reading Golden books, and I was really fascinated with some beautiful work. There's Tom Oreb and Gustav Tengren did the Saggy Baggy, and then there's you that, there was a couple books there that were just unbelievably gorgeous. So, one of them was My Christmas Treasury.
Yes, and that was one of my better ones.
That was beautiful. And how did you get involved with Golden Books? Was that through your agent also, or
part of? I don't know exactly how it happened. I think they called me in for one book, and they liked what I did, and they kept wanting to use me. And I finally quit working for them because I was working for practically nothing. And if I said, if I'm going to starve to death, I'll do it on my time.
Yeah, that's.
I enjoyed doing the Christmas Carol book, the Alibaba, fairy tales, fairy stories.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did a book called, what was it called? I can't think of it right at the moment. It had to do with a book that the Disney people put out. And
hmm.
Or the Toy Soldier song is in it. Now, I can't think of the name of it.
Oh, I know what you're saying. Yeah, I can't think of it either. I know what you're, yeah.
Isn't that funny? I can't think of it to save my soul. But I did the big mathematics book, and that was the one I enjoyed doing.
Yes. Designed
the book, did the layout, and did the illustrations.
When something like Christmas Treasury or Alibaba and the 40 Thieves, something like that, did you work closely with the writing, with the writers?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
They just handed me the script and said, go to it. And
that's amazing. That's
so I did all the design, layout. Everything was mine. Nobody helped me in that.
That's fantastic. So.
And they didn't pay anything. I mean, it's ridiculous. I think the Alibaba book, I think, was $500, and I had to pay 25% of that to the agent.
Oh, jeez. So,
it was tough going in those days, but I was beginning to get a name, and things were coming a little easier.
With stuff like Colliers and Boys, like, what was the turnaround time they expected from you? Like, when they, you know, once they said, okay, we want you to do this illustration, or what was your lead time that you were...
Well, with Colliers, generally, I was always a fast worker. And so he would call me Friday evening, and I'd have to go in, and he expected the sketches Monday morning, and I'd have it finished by Wednesday.
Wow.
And sometimes even faster than that. And I only had two, not rejects, but... I had to do one over again,
mm-hmm.
one cover. I had a caricature of Arthur Godfrey, and it did look kind of, well, it looked like him. That was the trouble. So I said, well, let me do one natural. And I did, and that was the cover I did for him, for Colliers.
And wow.
Incidentally, I had a different style. I fit it to the magazine I was working for. The Colliers, I thought, was a little higher class than Boys Life. Boys Life was more for boys.
Right.
So the technique is a little bit different, but still very painty.
So what did you, use like oils, or did you use acrylic?
No, I used gouache, that is.
Oh, okay.
Gouache entirely.
Beautiful stuff, though. It's beautiful. I love the... Your style, which is so unique, is the fact that you could look at some of your stuff online that you have at your site, and it looks one way, but then you've got other ones, like there were some illustrations there you had that just looked like black and white line art with some like pink in the background.
Yes.
Kind of a very simple and modern, but you know, but just so clean and really neat.
Well, I like to work that way, and my work was good-natured, you might say.
Right.
My mean men weren't really mean.
Right. No, I love that.
It's a good, clean look. And
yeah.
I enjoyed doing it very much. I did 22 covers for Boys Alive. I did 3 for Colliers. And
but, I mean, I would look at that art, and then you turn around, then you see something like you did in the Christmas Treasury, where you have, like, the child's peeping through the window, kind of with a tear looking.
That was one of the earlier ones, believe it or not.
And that's beautiful work. That's just, man.
And I thought the one of the... Fairy stories, I thought was one of the better books.
Yeah.
I did. Yeah. They were fun to do. If I'm not going to make any money on them, at least I can do is enjoy doing it.
Yeah. Did you ever, at any time in your career, did you ever consider creating like a comic strip or maybe working in animation?
As a matter of fact, I've had in my mind all these years a fandom comic strip in my head. I submitted one, and they almost took it, but they didn't. And the one came out similar to it later, and I found out why. I did a story about a witch and all the crazy things that go on with that. And it was a funny, cute little story. But when I submitted the story, I was trying to show how I would introduce different characters in the script instead of giving a running story, if you know what I mean.
Right. Yeah.
And they thought it was something that wouldn't be able to follow through the years. It was disjointed. It didn't have a continuity.
Right.
And so they said, well, maybe it's a mistake, but we're not going to do it. Well, years later, I found out that this there was another witch strip that ran for a while. I don't remember the name of it, but it was by the same. This artist had submitted some strips to this group, and they said, "No, that's, we don't want to use that. But we think a witch would be a good storyline for you to use." And this is the people that just saw mine.
So
he got the, and I think mine was better, frankly. But you always think that. So.
Yeah. Well, I think it's probably Broomhilda.
It was Broomhilda.
Yeah, Russell. I forgot the guy's name. Russell Davis.
I forget it too. Myers, I think. It was.
Russell. Yeah.
But when it first came out, his witch was very much like mine.
Isn't that something?
And it slowly changed. But he admitted that he had been told that they would do this strip about a witch, and mine was, it was kind of funny. I had crazy things in it.
Wow, do you still have all the originals of that? And
I have all the originals, but I only have about 30 pages or so.
That's great, though. That's really neat.
Maybe I can make a copy of them and send them to you.
That would be fantastic. I'd love to see that. I'm trying to develop a strip myself, and I don't want, you know, my problem that I'm having right now is that newspapers are dying in leaps and bounds, and I don't know where to
That's
go.
What's happening. That's why I haven't pursued it any farther.
Yeah, I'm confused. I'm not sure which way to go. Should I go through children's storybook, make it a children's storybook? And I know there's not much money in that, but I know they tell you that's not the reason for going into something. But
place to go is go where they're doing computer work.
Right.
Now, I hate the word, and I don't like the art, but that's what's all being done now.
Right, I know, and that's the thing. It's
comic strips are just...
It's frustrating.
Even when the things were going good, they only accepted one a year.
Exactly.
And yeah. I can remember when I was a boy, the comic strip took up a whole page.
Yeah.
And you'd have about 7 panels across for each one. Now they're so tiny you can't read them.
That's ridiculous what they've done to it.
There's no space to draw anything. There's no chance to really expand.
Right. You can't really develop.
Up into a postage stamp. And,
yeah. And there's so much. My concern, though, is you try to do something like a web comic, is the problem is that it's so saturated because there's no control. And, you know, without that editorial control, and I know people don't like that, but without it, you've got just hodgepodge of so much stuff that it's hard to really break through that. So you're
most of them that are running today, I don't even read them anymore. They're not funny.
No, and they're kind of yeah. And mine, I guess what I'm going toward more is a story, because I like story. I mean, I want a developing story. And mine's mine's about a little boy.
Well, comic books are doing better than the strips in the papers.
Right.
Maybe you could get onto something on that line. I don't know.
Yeah, that may have to be
I don't recommend it particularly, but that seems like a better bet.
Right.
I know what you're going through. I have 2 grandchildren. One is about, I think he's about 15, and his sister, who is about 10 or 13, 10 or 14, and they are so talented that it's just pitiful, because you wonder, what are they going to do with all that?
Right. You know, and it's
just so clever and so sharp, and they really attract attention with what they're doing. But
something has got to change, though. I mean, something—it's like you almost have to crash before it improves. I don't know.
I have no answer for you. People I've known for years. I know. I heard Jim Bingham say many years ago. He says, "I don't know where I'm going to get my next job."
Right.
And he was one of the busiest illustrators in the business.
Yeah, that's the thing, and like I said, you can go online, and there's some very, very talented people out there online, but the problem is, the only way they make money is if they sell, like, t-shirts, and, you know, the art's given away for free.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I'm not really fond of that business model myself, but I was raised...
You have to be a Schultz.
Yeah, it's really, I don't know, I guess I'm from the old school, I'm 45, but I'm from the school where... You know, my dad always instilled into me that you don't give away your skills for free, ever, you know.
Yeah.
And but now that's kind of in art. That's kind of where it's going. But
you are held valuable as what, how you're paid. I mean,
yes,
they
exactly.
They don't pay you much. You're not valued very much.
Right.
And I don't know. It's frustrating.
Yeah.
I no longer in it because I can't do the work.
Right.
I'm 88 years old and I'm partially blind. And
but I guess the next. I mean. I look at my next question, and it's kind of like it's kind of the next chapter, it looks like, in your career, which was, you know, I have to ask about it because it seems, I mean, I went online and looked at some of the work with the pop-ups, and you developed this unique rubber band activated pop-up card.
Yes.
That I guess this company called Graphics 3.
Graphics 3 out of Jupiter, Florida, yes.
And they absolutely, they have a beautiful write-up there about you. But how did that? How did that? How did you get into that? That
ever hear the word necessity?
Yes.
I was a freelance for many years, and I found out that if I went on a vacation, I didn't make any money while I was gone, and I didn't have any medication if I was sick, and I decided I'd let somebody else pay for it, and I'd do the work for them. So that's when I got a job with this outfit that did pop-ups. Mm. And I fell in love with pop-ups. I said, I'm so fascinated that I'm going to make myself the best in the business. And if I'm not, I'm going to be pretty damn near it.
Yeah.
And I think I've achieved that.
Oh, yeah. According to them, too. Yeah. And some of the stuff I've seen, I would say absolutely. Yeah. There was one of them, I believe, was the, gosh, what was, oh, I'm trying to think, English Toy Shop.
Oh, yeah, the toy shop. That one.
Louis Award, right?
Best card of the year one year.
Yeah, it was in 1990 in New York City, the best card of the year, the Louis Award or something. That's phenomenal. Now, was the rubber band, was that process, was that already being done by Graphics 3, or did you?
They've done it for years. This is their base. I wanted to do away with the rubber bands because there were a lot of problems with them. And I wanted to develop one where you just pull the string that the tag's on, just pull it, and it sets it up.
That's really neat,
but
though.
The boss never, he never did want to do that. And I guess because his advertising had talked about the things that pop up, and they didn't always do that pop up.
Now, on something like that, how long would one take from like concept to completion?
To complete that?
Yeah.
Well, the piano that I did took me a year to figure out how to make that curve backside. You know how the S curve is.
Right.
And to do that in paper is a little difficult, and it took me a year to solve it. But ordinarily, it'd take about from sketches to finish and all about a month.
Wow,
that's. And we would get.
But that paid better, right? That paid better than Golden Books, did it?
And yeah. Well, it paid my medical bills and it paid my vacations, and
right.
It was just better all the way around. And I had an income that I could depend on every week.
Right.
Then I got into carving, and that was because I'd done paperwork and art all the time, and I had to please everybody else with it. And I said, I want to do something that I don't have to please anybody but me.
So well,
I started carving.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about those wood carvings. Those are amazing.
That was a hobby, really.
So did you sell them, like, in craft shows, or just strictly?
No, I didn't sell them. I just...
Totally for yourself.
I don't want to be insulted by taking less than minimum wage for
them. Right. No, there's one you did, but there's two that I really loved. There was one with the frog playing the guitar, I believe.
Oh, yes.
And then the one where the Broncos kicked the cowboy onto the ground.
Right.
Yeah, those are beautiful, beautiful stuff. The detail.
I don't think, you saw the one in the website, I think.
Right, right.
Engine.
Yeah, it's just some great, there's some beautiful things there. I don't know how you, that had to take weeks and months. I mean, that had to be just,
Well, I didn't hurry on it. I just loafed along with it. It took me about a year to do it because I had about 8 figures on it and the carving of the machine and painting and all that. And
wow.
You don't work day in and day out on it. You just do it when you feel like it.
Right, right.
So, but I enjoyed carving, and I'm to that. I probably can see well enough to do a carving.
Oh, that's fantastic. That would be great. That'd be great. So now you were, there's something, I don't know where I read it. You had like a very historically significant house. And
I lived in a house that was probably built around 1672 or 4.
Holy cow.
And we lived in it. I lived in it for 50 years.
Jeez.
And recently sold it.
Ugh.
And I knew I'd have trouble because it's a special house.
Right.
Not everybody would want to live in the old house. And as it happened, I divided the property into three lots so I could get enough money out of it. Mm-hmm. And the neighbors objected. And I had to go through the courts and sue the zoning commission.
Right.
And I had to sue them to get them to change it so I could sell the building to a builder. And the builder bought it. After a year and a half, I finally got paid. But it was because it was an old house. They're difficult. And people are not as interested in old things now as they were when I was collecting.
Oh, but the old ones, to me, have so much character. It's amazing, you know? But, yeah, and you're right. You're right. They don't. But I think that's wrong. I think it's sad because it's...
I had collected things for 40 years. And I had some really good stuff. And when I had the auction for everything, they didn't bring as much as I thought they should. And I know my iron, I had some good iron pieces, and iron went just pretty like junk. I mean, I paid good prices for the iron when I bought it, and I didn't quite break even with
gosh. When I sold it. Yeah, that's kind of, and it makes you feel kind of insulted in a way. Yeah, you're.
Well, Williamsburg is sold that big house that they showed that was the colonial house on the plantation.
Mm-hmm.
They sold that, and Sturbridge has sold that big restaurant they had. And they say people, they're having a hard time making money to keep it going. So that people are just not as interested in old things as they used to be.
Huh. Well, if you were to, and I know this is hard for a lot of creative people, a lot of artists, that this is always a hard question, but if you had to go back, if you had to pinpoint a certain part of your career or certain works, what would you have to say what was your favorite?
Well, my favorite was my all-time favorite was Collier's because that was my magazine. It fit what I did very well. And I was getting work every week from them. And it was fun when it lasted.
Yeah.
But they finally went under. And
well, it showed that you loved it because, I mean, it was just some of the most beautiful stuff I think you did was in there. And I had to ask you this because I saw this on your site. There was a picture, and I don't know if you know, probably not fair to you, you may not recall it, but there was a picture, it looked like an aardvark with like an eye drop or something.
That was my first illustration.
Really?
Yeah.
That was really, what was that for?
It was for Liberty, I believe. It's a defunct magazine now for many years, but it was for, I believe it was for Liberty, and it was about an aardvark. It was describing an aardvark. And
that was really, see, I love animals, so that was like, it immediately struck my eye.
I've done lots of animals, and I did a whole book of A to Z animals for Reader's Digest.
Oh, neat.
These were art forms, though. They were not caricatures.
Oh, okay. But still, that's still neat. That's still neat.
My boy's life stuff, there's lots of animal things in it that I did.
So you must have had, your grandkids were pretty fortunate. You probably had some really interesting stuff to show them, you know, that you did.
You know, they're not interested at all.
Oh, really? Yeah.
They're more interested in what they're doing, but they're still very young.
Yeah. Yeah, but growing up, though, you probably read them some stories that you had, and they're still, because they're timeless, you know, that's really neat.
I truthfully say that I enjoyed my work immensely.
That's great. And all this...
It's all over my studio here now. I have it hanging up. I wouldn't hang it when I was at home working.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I'm here and I'm not doing anything, I have a chance to look at it.
That's just incredible stuff. And the
Collier's had a funny system, too. They had a four-color magazine, but for economy's sake, they had some that I only had three colors to work with. And I had one illustration that had I had a red and a green and a black for a palette.
Oh.
I defy you to come up with anything great with that. or sometimes I'd have a spread, and one page would be four color, and one page would be three color.
Oh, no.
So the blue would be the one missing, so I'd have to do a gray, a light gray that sort of resembled a blue. And I got away with it pretty well.
Wow. Well, you know, it'd be really neat if you had someone take a photograph of, like, your, you know, where you, the room there where you've got all your stuff and post that online. That'd be really neat to see.
That's great.
I'm always fascinated with that kind of stuff. But, well, I want to thank you for your time because this is really interesting. And
thank you very much.
And you're just an amazing talent, and thank you so much for doing such fine work and, you know, being a part of our lives. Okay, well, we'll see you later. Thank you very much.
All right, Tom.
Okay, bye-bye.
That concluded the interview with Lowell Hess. I hope you enjoyed it, and hopefully you could get past all of my bumbling and fumbling and my uhs and ands and buts. But again, it was a pleasure to talk to the legendary illustrator. And I've got a couple more on deck, so I'm hoping to have a couple more interesting interviews coming up. If you enjoyed this one and the previous one with Joe Harris, let me know. Drop me a line. You can email me at togotooner, that's TOGOTOONER, at gmail.com. And let me know what you think, or leave a comment on the Boing blog there at Libsyn. That's boing.libsyn.com. And you know, tell me what you think. I'll continue to do some more interviews if you're interested. And I've got the another great, actually an animation legend coming up. Hopefully I can get him on. That would be Gene Deitch, the Tom Terrific man. He did Terrible Thompson, a great comic strip that never quite took hold for reasons we'll find out. And he just did so many other things. So hopefully we'll have Gene coming on shortly, and a couple more surprises as well. So if you're interested and you like this stuff, let me know. Thanks. Bye.
Spinning wheel fly.
Good.